morning. I'm convening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, Tuesday, February 5th. I'm opening an informational meeting on the tax expenditure report. Mr. Allenack.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So you have two items on the agenda today, the informational meeting and then the public hearing, which we'll get to afterwards, relates to the definition of tax expenditures. And the informational meeting is by the Department of Revenue, the research section. They produce the biennial tax expenditure report. It's about 20 years old, or might be a little bit older than that now. They come every session and go through the new report. It accompanies the governor's budget, so it was released at the same time, back in early December, I believe. And so they're going to go through the, it's kind of an orientation for the report, but they're also going to be touching on some of the issues that House Bill 2128 tries to get at.
Good. Thank you. This is the one I jokingly referred to as the doorstop, right? It's a lot of pages.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Hart. I'm a economist in the research section at the Oregon Department of Revenue. I'm here today with my colleague, Tim Fitzgerald, and we will give a brief overview of a large book and then touch on the issues related to extending the definition of tax expenditure to have a kind of prospective effect on sunsets for new provisions. So I'd like to start with the definition of the tax expenditure so that we know what we're talking about. Oregon has a law that defines a tax expenditure, and in essence, a tax expenditure is a provision of law, either federal law or Oregon law, that deviates from the established tax. Established tax in this case is actually not defined in statute, so we kind of have a subjective standard that we apply to that. But that definition also says that it includes tax deductions, tax exclusions, tax subtractions, tax exemptions, tax deferrals, preferential tax rates, and tax credits. So it's a pretty broad definition. The Budget Accountability Act of 1995 required the first publishing, I think, in 1996, of the tax expenditure report, because these provisions in law, these tax deductions and exemptions, are similar to direct expenditures. That is, instead of, say, a mortgage interest deduction, the government could send a check to individuals to cover a part of their mortgage or their mortgage interest. And so in that sense, we have a trade-off between reducing taxes or increasing spending that is played out through the tax expenditures. And the purpose of the act was to have the report available to allow the tax expenditures to be debated as part of ongoing budget discussions. There are several categories of tax expenditures. Some of the tax expenditures are much more like direct spending than others. The things that are more like direct spending are things like incentives to encourage certain activities. The mortgage interest deduction encourages home ownership, for instance. And we have some that are financial assistance to certain taxpayers, and those are more like direct spending, especially if we have a refundable credit or if we have, say, an auction of tax credits. Those are much more like direct spending. And then things that are less like direct spending are provisions that simplify tax compliance or simplify tax administration, something like allowing businesses to use cash accounting in some cases instead of requiring accrual accounting might simplify their accounting and their tax compliance. And provisions that require tax expenditures because they're prohibited by federal law, such as, say, taxing federal land, is much less like direct spending. It would be nearly impossible to replace that with a spending program. But all of these provisions kind of along that spectrum are included in the book.
And before we pass that slide, just because it's a little bit unusual and not everyone is familiar with it, what do you mean by an auction? We've heard it before, but could you include it in this morning's discussion?
Chair Nathanson, there are a couple of programs whereby the department I think it's all the department, raises money for a actual spending program by auctioning off tax credits. And generally, those tax credits are required to be purchased at auction, I think currently for at least 98 cents on the dollar. They're sold in units of $98 minimum bid at the auction. In the past, we have actually had the auction results exceed $100 for $100 in credits, but likely because of federal tax changes, that will change. I'm not sure we know exactly how. So I think we have a program for higher education scholarships, and I think we might have
film and video.
Film and video is the other big one, and there might have been another one, but I'm not sure I know all of them.
Someone's willing to pay more than $100 for $100 of credit.
Chair Nathanson, they have been in the past, yes.
Yes, Representative Finley.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Did I hear you say that is there a floor on them at 98 cents, or is it typically that's the level?
Chair Nathanson, Representative, I believe the floor for all of them right now is 98 cents, but we can get back to you if that's not the case.
Thank you.
The law that required the tax expenditure report required that it have several elements about each tax expenditure in it, including listing the statutory authority for the tax expenditure, an estimate of the revenue lost by the provision, the purpose of the provision, which often is implicit rather than explicit, a section that describes the direct beneficiaries of the tax expenditures, and an evaluation, which is done by the program area experts and the other executive agencies generally. And also it required that they be grouped by the category of the budget program or function. We have expanded our reporting by program and function so that you can look at, say, a list of tax expenditures that have the purpose of economic development in one place, and you can find that on our website. It also requires that there be recommendations on whether to extend the sunset or not by the governor. It doesn't require that we list the sunset for each provision, but we do that as well.
And is the recommendation requirement simply yes or no, or does sometimes it come back with we recommend it be modified in this way to add sideboards or change an amount or a threshold, for example?
Chair Nathanson, for the record, my name is Tim Fitzgerald, an economist with the Department of Revenue. Generally, it's been a yes or a no. We've always suggested the possibility that we could put more detail in the report. It's the statute isn't particularly specific.
Okay.
So the Department of Revenue has a specific role in creating the tax expenditure report. We identify new, modified, or deleted tax expenditures so that we know what the actual list of things that are going to be in the book is. We write the descriptions for the tax expenditures, and we often borrow very heavily from the Congressional Research Service if it's a federal provision. We produce estimates of revenue loss. Again, for federal provisions, we usually kind of take Oregon's share of what was estimated by the Joint Committee on Taxation at the federal level. And we work with agencies and others to collect information on who's the beneficiaries of the tax expenditures and to facilitate the agency evaluations. We also coordinate because there are budgetary impacts for extending tax expenditures, we kind of coordinate between the Chief Financial Office, LRO, and the Governor's Office on the sunsets and the budgetary impacts of costs to extend tax expenditures. In this edition of the report, we have 18 chapters. Each tax program gets a chapter. We combine the two income tax programs, corporate and personal income tax, for chapter one. The next big chapter is property tax in chapter two, and then smaller taxes make up the rest. Chapters 17 and 18 are new this year for the vehicle use and privilege taxes. And if you had a tax expenditure of the day calendar, you wouldn't be able to get through all of them in a year because we have 368 this year. Also, that means if you ask us about any one in particular, we're not likely to know about it. We're not experts on all 368. Although we do know some about most of them. The income tax programs, Chapter 1 is 190 tax expenditures, and the property tax is 134. So that's the bulk of the book. For this edition, we have some notable changes. The biggest changes on the federal side came through what is commonly called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. That changed at the federal level, not at the state level, tax rates for personal and corporate taxes. The federal limit on deduction for state and local taxes actually flows through to Oregon, but because state taxes aren't deductible in Oregon, it's effectively a $10,000 limit on the deduction for property taxes. There's significant changes in the taxation of international corporations that I think this committee has had some introduction to. Those are pretty deep. And there were, for businesses, significant increases in the allowances for depreciation and for expensing. And those changes are reflected in the individual tax expenditures described in the book. And there's also, in a couple of places, some description of the changes in the larger sense. Appendix D of the book lists our 24 new tax expenditures. The 32 Oregon provisions that had some legislative modifications in 2017 or 18, and 23 provisions that were deleted for one reason or another. 18 of those were deleted because they were sunset and also no longer have a revenue impact. We'll continue to list sunset provisions until they no longer have a significant revenue impact, or more than de minimis.
And is that referring to what we often call the tail? Something's done, but you're still paying for it?
Chair Nathanson, yes. Okay. So something like the business energy tax credit has a long tail, and so that stays in the book until that's gone.
Got it.
And with that, I'll turn the microphone over to Tim.
So again, for the record, my name is Tim Fitzgerald, also an economist. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the uses of the report, what you can do with it, and then some of the emerging issues we found as we're working through it. So the report is daunting, doorstop, as you put it, but it's really more like a dictionary in the sense that if you want to look up individual information, I think there's a lot here. I wouldn't necessarily recommend reading it cover to cover. I don't know if anybody does that, but you know, if you're looking for a good night's sleep, I suppose that might help. But with all of that, there is a lot that's going on here. 368 provisions, tens of billions of dollars, and basically every person in Oregon is affected by something in the book, whether your kids go to a school that's the property is exempt from taxation, or you claim some deduction or anything. Basically, everybody somewhere or another is impacted by this. So what I recommend is that we have an index in the back of the book that is actually really good for finding some information. If you want to find out all the ones related to housing, for example, it's in the book. You can flip through. There's about 27 of them, if I remember correctly. And that can give you a good idea of everything from an income tax credit given to banks that provide loans for low-income housing to a property tax exemption for certain kinds of veterans housing. And any of these kinds of things can be together. You can find them as a group. This table here is a little bit complicated, but what we're trying to do is show the order of magnitude here by adding up all of the revenue impacts that we were able to put together for this. And what you can see is that we have the estimated revenues of these tax programs, over $20 billion projected for 1921 for the income tax programs. And we have about $14 billion of revenue impacts for the income tax expenditures in the book. And then we break that $14 billion down into the exclusions, adjustments, the subtractions, and then the Oregon-specific ones. And from that, you can see the bulk of the revenue impact here comes from federal provisions that Oregon is connected to. And I'll talk about those a bit more in a second here. On the property tax side, the bulk of these are taken up by full exemptions. A lot of these are exemptions that you might be familiar with. I mentioned schools, churches, graveyards. There's also lots of enterprise zones, strategic investment program. A lot of different programs exist in these. This is just a way to add up all the revenue impacts. Now, we actually caution people, you're not supposed to add up the revenue impacts because, for example, something might be able to be exempt under a couple of different provisions. Mm-hmm. And so just because you take away one doesn't mean that they would immediately become fully taxable. And so we say don't do it, but then since everybody would do it, we figure we might as well do what we can to kind of provide this information with some clarity. All other tax programs, which is, there are quite a few of them, we only have about 44 of these are tax expenditures related to those programs, and they have a much smaller revenue impact overall, with just over $400 million. So I mentioned in the personal income tax side, there are 10 tax expenditures that are 70% of the revenue impact that we're able to estimate. Of those 10, seven of them are from Oregon's connection to federal tax law, and then three of them are Oregon-specific provisions. And that makes up the vast majority of the impact here. I'm guessing you'll recognize a lot of these as some of the more well-known aspects of the income tax system. On the property tax side, almost all of these are ones that are, I sometimes say they're kind of invisible to people. They don't necessarily realize every city hall could potentially be taxable, but it isn't because there's a specific provision in law. Every forest that's owned by the federal government or by the state, those could also be potentially taxable. Including the standing timber as the property on the land could be taxable. It has a specific exemption in law under property taxes that it is not taxed, and that's part of the way that the system currently works. Together, these 10 provisions make up 89% of the total revenue impact. It is basically, we have 120 provisions that are less, or about 10% of the total. So this is there's a severe disparity in terms of if you're talking about where the money is in tax expenditures, it's basically in these 20 that I just listed. And if you have any questions on some of these, I'd be happy to answer. Okay. So with that kind of covered, the emerging issue that we're looking at is that there is, starting in 2009 with tax credits, there's been a lot of emphasis on a six-year sunset for a lot of provisions. And in 2013, there was a provision added to Oregon law that expanded that idea to any new tax expenditures that were created. It's in ORS 315.037, and essentially it says that any tax expenditure that doesn't have a particular, that's not explicitly have a date that it will sunset after 6 years. This has been a bit of a challenge for us to implement, is my way of putting it. Partly because while it seems very clear and very simple, and there's an entire book that you can go through that will list tax expenditures, the actual definition of tax expenditure is not as clear-cut as it might seem. So to go back to this definition, and as John alluded to, if something is exempted from the impact of established tax, it's a tax expenditure. But without established tax being defined, it can be somewhat subjective. So for example, is the established tax the intent of the law, or is it the letter of the law? Is the established tax what was established at the time the tax was originally created, or is it the premise that the tax is based? And if you significantly modify the premise, that changes the base, and that changes what the established tax would be. Those kinds of questions aren't necessarily answerable at this point.
Would you please restate the second one relating to the premise and the base? And say that again, and also say it in another way, because I think this is going to be a very important topic for us to hear.
Thank you, Chair. Absolutely. So if you think of a base, I'll start from the premise here. The base of a tax is what is taxable. So for example, in the property tax system, there's a law that says all real property in Oregon is subject to property tax. But property as a concept can mean, for example, your land and improvements on it. It can also mean a television. It can mean your bank account. Your bank account is something you own. It is property. All of these things.
But
a bank account is not real property.
And is there also intellectual property?
And intellectual property, patents, any of those things. Now, the base of the tax from law appears to be real property, and it's somewhat, I'm not going to say crystal clear, but it's somewhat clear in statute. There's a further exemption that clarifies some of this. We had some discussion about this 2 years ago because the book used to include a provision for intangible personal property, but sorry, I'm getting a little in the weeds there. Really, the question is, you establish a base for the tax, and then there's a number of exemptions later. For example, some might say churches and religious institutions are exempt from tax. And that might seem like, oh, okay, well, the base of the tax is real property. The church and the land it's on are exempt. This is a tax expenditure. It meets this definition in law. But, for example, if churches had always been exempt and it was understood and that was law, then when property taxes became codified, does that mean that it was already part of the established base of the tax, that churches aren't part of the base? And I think it's a pretty reasonable interpretation to say, well, the established property tax system didn't include things like government-owned property or churches or parks or that kind of thing. And I don't think it's a settled question personally. I'm not sure that we have a definite answer, but that's the kind of, that's the issue, I think, in some ways. Excuse me, in some ways. Other ways of looking at it would be that the base is sort of a normative concept of the tax. Like it's if you're a corporation, you know, you have an idea of an income for it, but then if you want to completely flip the system and look at a different base for taxing corporations, then you would have a whole new basis of your tax. And then that change means that now you have a whole new basis on which to look at whether something is a deviation or and reducing the impact of that established tax. I don't think we have a clear answer. We have a couple of different views, and I'll talk a minute about some of the criteria we have been using for the report. But traditionally, the way we looked at it was, this is a report to provide information, so we would tend to be more inclusive. We would try to include anything in here that we thought might be helpful. Even if we weren't exactly sure, it made more sense. If we reported something and it turned out it wasn't really a tax expenditure by some definition, we could take it out of subsequent books and it's not really a problem. Or if it provides helpful information, we can leave it in there. And that's been how we've tended to approach it. So, as I alluded to, this is our very somewhat daunting list here of how we've tried to approach it. We sometimes joke that it can seem more like philosophy than it can seem like actual tax law to try to debate the question of, what do you mean established tax? What does it actually truly represent here? And so we've ended up with kind of a list of criteria that we look at, but we don't really have a black and white rule to say yes or no. We have a lot of things, I think, that are kind of on the line, and I'm going to talk about one of those in just a moment. One I'll call attention to here is that when we looked at, for example, property taxes, it's the area I'm a little more familiar with, Measure 5 and 50 to a lot of people might seem like a tax expenditure, but we consider them part of the basis on the tax structure of Oregon. And that's, I would say, that could be a difference of opinion for some people. I wouldn't want to claim it's the definite final answer here. So, what this can do for us is it can create a, combine that with the fact that any new tax expenditure has a 6-year sunset. If it's a tax expenditure, we have to then take a close look at any new law that's passed. In 2017, the large transportation package introduced a couple of new tax programs. And as part of that, it included a number of provisions, such as this one that that we have listed up here. So we have RS 32405, which in my understanding establishes what the tax is. And then in RS 32425, you have what looks to be fairly clear exemptions from it. However, this is all part of the same bill that was passed by the legislature. So as one way of putting it would be, well, this is just the legislature's way of defining the base of the tax. And therefore, this is not a tax expenditure. It's clearly part of the established tax. So the question for us is, well, does it belong in the book? As one question for reporting purposes, but then separately we have the administrative question of, does it have a sunset, and if so, when is that? So what we came up with was language that we can include in the report, but I would say trying to represent our ambiguity on this point and our lack of definite answers. This is directly from the report, and we say there is ambiguity about whether this provision is a tax expenditure as defined under the law. If it's a tax expenditure, that would seem it would sunset after 6 years. If it is not a tax expenditure, then it would not sunset.
Okay, thank you. Just a moment. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. As you're discussing this concept, I see the distinction. I'm trying to find the difference. And what I mean is, I understand for reporting purposes it's important for you, and also for the sunset provision it's important for us. But does it, in the final analysis, change the way dollars and cents are if it were in that 6-year period? So if it's part of the established base that it's excluded, or it is a tax expenditure, is there a difference in dollars at that point.
Chair Nathanson, Representative. While it's in effect, there's no difference if it's a tax expenditure or if it's not. It really is purely a question of
the sunset.
Okay. Whether or not it kicks, essentially.
Thank you.
So with this ambiguity, we have a number of provisions in the book this year that have this language. There are others that we might have needed to place some more squishy language on because we're not exactly sure. I would stress that we did what we could to provide this information, but I wouldn't say it's the final word on the issue. I believe it would require it to go to a court to adjudicate whether something actually met the definition and if it sunset. But this is where we landed currently is kind of best we understand.
Paraphrase. This is money that could have been collected as a tax except for a carve-out. Is that another way of putting it?
That would be one way of putting it. That's not how it's written in the law directly, but yes.
Right. But that's a part of this recognizing the ambiguity. Is it the base or is it a tax expenditure?
Yeah.
There was a carve-out. It would have applied to everything, but now it applies to only this much.
Chair Nathanson, that's sort of true, but there are actually some provisions where, for example, the federal government instructs the states that they are not allowed to tax something. One issue that came up was that if a vehicle dealer is selling a car to an instrument of the federal government, that car is not considered part of the base for this tax, I believe. And there's a question of, well, that was because of the supremacy clause, where the states can't tax the federal government. So that means that it really couldn't be part of the base in one way of thinking of it, so therefore it's not a tax expenditure.
Right.
But at the same time, the definition of tax expenditure, I'll go back to it, specifically says any law of the federal government or the state. So I'm not sure we have a clear answer on that. We ended up putting in some language basically saying, we're putting it in the book, but we don't think that this could ever go away because we don't have the option.
Right, so there are some things that we have control over and some things that we don't. And it might be possible to describe things in a way where even apart from the decision about is it in the base or is it a tax expenditure, if they are things that we, the Oregon State Legislature, defined, we have control over it. And could then, if we came out on the side that it's a tax expenditure, we could then review it in 6 years. Is it still achieving the purpose, the original intent, for example? Do we still like it the way it is, as opposed to something imposed on us by the federal government, which we can say what we want. We have no influence or control over it.
Chair Dickens, I think that's broadly correct. There is one additional factor there, which is we're human. We can make mistakes, and we have made mistakes before where we thought something seemed like a clear tax expenditure, and then on further review, we said, actually, it's really more of a spending program. We had a couple we took out of the book this time because it turned out that really it was described as a tax refund, but really it was a process of providing funds. I don't know the details on that one, so I wouldn't want to get into it, but there's a few things that look like that. Project Greenlight, for example, or the gain share as part of SIP are often described as part of the tax program, and some people think of them as tax expenditures. We don't think they meet the definition because they look like spending programs to us. So there could be a little bit of fuzziness there. What happened 2 years ago when we reviewed, there was a law that was passed in 2015 changing the way that the residency status of active duty military personnel was handled. We believed it to be an extension of an existing tax expenditure. And so we included it in the book. We figured there's no sunset attached because it's just a modification of something already there. That particular law happened to be retroactive a few years. And this year, when we were reviewing the law, especially in the context of some of the federal, some federal things and other pieces we learned, we went, actually, we made a little bit of a mistake there. It probably should have been up for review in the 2017 legislature because it looks like, based on counting 6 years from when it first took effect, it's a separate tax expenditure that should have sunset at the end of 2017. And so we're, I believe, still looking at that one. But our understanding is that that kind of thing can happen in these cases where we can, you could say, well, we want to have a chance to review these and you want that, but if we're not sure if something is up for sunset or not, we can't necessarily present that information to the governor or to you in a way that is clear, because if we don't know, then we can't tell you what we don't know.
Mr. Alanak, there are a couple of things that we just learned from this conversation just now, that if this committee is going to go deeper into this topic, I'd like for you to bring back the examples for us of things that were first considered as tax expenditures, but on further reflection, they were determined it's more like a spending program, so that we can understand how the department is making that distinction.
Sure.
Thank you.
Put together that information.
So actually, that brings me to the end of our presentation. If you have any other questions or anything else, we'd be happy to answer that.
That was all perfectly clear. Thank you.
Well, hopefully in the end, it makes the report much less intimidating, and you can find a lot of useful information there about Oregon's complex tax system.
Questions for this panel? Yes,
good.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you. Actually, not so much a question, but I want to thank you for your presentation, for putting together the book. I can't imagine how long that you spend working on that book, 2 year cycle maybe. But I think the most important thing you said was really at the top, which is a tax expenditure is money out of the bucket. I think a lot of times we have proposals that come into us, particularly tax credits, that are sort of in essence the sponsor's way of suggesting that it doesn't cost us money. And everything that we define as a subtraction in one way or another does cost us money out of the bucket. And I think that's just a really important fundamental place to start, and I appreciated your articulating it.
Representative Finley.
Thank you, Chair. I concur. This made a lot of sense. I mean, it defined, and why do we care? It answered that question very well.
That's right.
I appreciate that. So, and I promise not to use your book as a doorstop. Read it. Thank you.
Thanks. The information we've just heard is so important, and I want to note the size of the audience in the hearing room with us today.
Probably lots of viewers online.
I'm sure. I'm sure. That concludes our informational meeting. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2128.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill is directly tied to the conversation you just heard and takes the very potentially easiest or first step in modifying the definition of a tax expenditure. The language in the bill, the intent, is to modify the definition that you heard a few minutes ago to exclude any provisions of federal law that prevent the state or local government from taxation. Basically, the concept is if this book represents policies that the legislature can change to raise revenue, mm-hmm. then these federal ones don't fit that concept because the federal government has decided that the state and locals can't tax them. That might be the easiest of the concepts that you just heard about, the definitions of what is or is not a tax expenditure. So it just takes that first step, but the conversation can get much deeper and have much broader policy implications for that definition.
Thank you. Was it ever considered that there is a value to having a report on the value of those federal mm-hmm. exclusions, and that we ought to have the information somewhere as an appendix or somehow separately designated in a tax expenditure report? It dawns on me that if we're changing the definition and it's not to be called a tax expenditure, the name of the report would have to be changed, like tax expenditure report, and also a report on
federal action. Yes, that's a good point, Madam Chair. And the information, the way statute is written and some of the struggles that the department has gone through over time is all of this information for a tax expenditure. So if it gets tagged a tax expenditure, then there's this body of information. There could certainly be other categories where the legislature might find it helpful for just a simple listing. Here are the federal provisions, here's what they are, and here's an estimate of the cost, without all of the machinery around evaluating a policy and so forth. So that's another important thing for the committee to consider, is that it's not a black and white issue in terms of whether it is or isn't. If there's still interest in getting information, statute can be modified to create separate buckets, if you will, of information. That's an option for the committee to consider.
Thank you. Is anyone signed up for public testimony?
Nobody had signed up.
And I don't see any hands raised in the audience. Before I close the public hearing on this bill, I call on the committee for discussion. Not at this, yes, Representative Finley.
I tend to try to bring it to the lowest common denominator, and I agree with Mr. Hollenbach, some of his statements that, you know, it is, I think this is a good exercise, and I think this is a viable exercise that we need to do to but I also think, we need to look at the impacts. I mean, if you can't touch any of the federal carve-outs or the federal issues, then I don't think that's not impactful for us. And we ought to take them out of there, because all the other provisions that, it's my belief, maybe I've misunderstood this, that we're talking about in the tax credits and the other expenditure issues are something we have direct control of. You know, the sunset provisions and the enactment of the others, we don't on the federal side of it. So it just muddies the water. I would certainly like to see the comment that here's all the federal stuff and here are the impacts of that. It would be nice to see that number associated with it. But an issue that comes to mind, though, is how do you deal with payments in lieu of taxes? I mean, you know, we receive a whole lot of money in this state of payments from the federal government in lieu of taxes, and it's not treated as it were taxes. It's treated as other means of income that's not subject to all the rest of our stuff. So I don't know if that's a can that we want to open at this point in time. So.
Representative Marsh.
And I would just add, I think it is interesting, but also in the category of things beyond our control.
Yeah, absolutely. And excuse me, but that's exactly right. That's why I support the idea of let's identify them, note the impacts, and get them out of the way. And maybe it'll, instead of 387 pages, it'll be 350. I absolutely agree.
Representative Breschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair and honorable committee members. I'm going to go back to December when this was introduced and why I voted no on introducing committee bills anonymously. Here we have a bill that could change tax law significantly with nobody testifying for it, but it's on our plate. And so it's hard to understand what the motivation is behind it, because it's attributed to no one except for this committee, but nobody's testifying for it or against it. So I just bring that up, that's why I don't like anonymous committee bills. There's no attribution on this one. It would be helpful, because then we could go talk to someone about what was the motive behind this? What are you trying to accomplish? Thank you.
Since we're still in a public hearing, I'd like to ask a representative from the department to come back to answer a question or two. I did hear to present information at an informational meeting, but have you read this bill?
Chair Nathanson, yes. I have taken a look at the bill. Mark Arst from the Department of Revenue is more familiar with our legislative policy, and that's why he came up here.
Thank you. My question is, from your point of view, from the executive branch, what's the impact of this bill on your work and on collecting revenue?
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Mark Arst with the Department of Revenue. So as far as the executive branch goes, right now we do not have a position on particular changes to the definition of what a tax expenditure would be. I think that from an administrative perspective, clarity is always appreciated. And I think that Tim did just an excellent job of laying out all the ambiguity that's out there right now as far as what is and is not a tax expenditure, and the sunset is and is not triggered. And I think that anything that the legislature can do to clarify when we would see the implicit six-year sunset come into effect would be very helpful. If we don't have that clarity, I think that Tim laid it clearly, the only way that we're actually going to get there is through case law, and that'll mean that we'll have to litigate some of these issues. What will likely happen is that the department will say that a particular exemption has sunset, will quit giving that exemption, or we will direct the assessors, the county assessors, that they should quit giving the exemption. And then someone could likely bring a court case if they disagreed with our interpretation of what we admit is a pretty ambiguous standard. So so that, I think, is administratively what would happen. From a revenue perspective, I don't know that the change that's discussed in the bill would, I would defer to Chris, but I don't think that the change that's discussed in the bill would actually have a revenue impact, because it simply says that if there's a prohibition in federal law from taxing something, then it's not considered a tax expenditure. And we obviously, if it's prohibited by federal law, we're obviously not taxing it currently, so.
Thank you. And a follow-up question. Go ahead.
Sorry, Chair Nathanson, I just want to add, I can work with Chris in terms of getting you a broad list of the various provisions that are we think would be impacted by the implicit sunset, to include with that as part of the ambiguous information. There are a number of provisions that are actually up for review this this legislative session that were enacted and effective six tax years ago, and so they're potentially that. And that might clarify how important this is.
Good, thank you. And a follow-up, I'm hearing some interest on the part of the committee from simplifying our work in a way of saying, look, this is the stuff we have control over. The other stuff we don't, we don't need to be looking at it in this report, but how difficult or easy would it be for you if somehow in the way the bill ends up being written, if we continue to work on this bill, to say, look, we really want the tax expenditure report to only be reporting on the stuff that the Oregon State Legislature has control over, but we are interested in some sort of a statement on what was the revenue impact of all the federal tax expenditures. Is that difficult for you to prepare some sort of a separate report or memorandum to the legislature so that we can have that information?
Chair Nathanson, we've looked at it a little bit. There's only, if I remember correctly, about 20 provisions that are in the tax expense report that are only there because federal law requires that they be there. It's actually a relatively narrow issue. So it wouldn't be a very big deal for us. We've already currently researched them and included them in the report, so we have a lot of the information, and most of them don't change very much year to year. So I don't think it would be a very big difference what we're currently doing with the report to just separate it out.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my guess is that the people that use this book a lot are tax accountants. Right? I mean, that's probably who's thumbing through it a lot and going, what does this expenditure mean? What does that not mean? Is this excluded or not? And so it'd be interesting to hear from somebody who represents that group, who uses this book, whether this type of law would be helpful for them or not. And that's more just a comment probably to the committee than to you, except for is it your understanding who uses this book? I mean, Department of Revenue obviously uses it, but I would expect that those preparing taxes for businesses, corporations, nonprofits, individuals use it a lot too.
Chair Nathanson, Representative. Actually, we tend to hear more from researchers and people interested in comparing between states the various tax codes. We get a lot of questions from academics who are trying to be able to figure out, for example, how does this state consider these types of property versus this type of property? There's been a lot of interest in relative tax rates and impacts and that kind of thing. I'm usually the person who takes a lot of the exterior questions that come in on the report, and I'm not sure I've ever gotten a question from a tax accountant. Hmm. Sometimes I get the impression they know more about the tax law than I do. So they might be one step ahead of us, if I'm honest here.
Well, when you're in court, yeah, they think they do, right? So,
And Chair Nathanson, if I could add, we think that it's also a big use to policymakers. So anyone who comes over and visits the Department of Revenue, this is the book that we give them. And I mean, I can't say enough about the work that folks do. We have advocates who contact us all the time and say, we'd like to create an exemption for housing. And as Tim said, there are many, many exemptions out there for housing right now. And so the first place that we'll start is, well, let's look at what the current state is and then see if what your idea is fits into one of these exemptions that already exist. Maybe it's a local option exemption that just hasn't been adopted by your particular municipality, or, you know, or maybe your idea is different in some way and we can, maybe it'd be better to tweak one of the existing exemptions. So we often point to that tax expenditure report, and the index, I think, is just of great value to you folks, especially as you try and define the policy that the state follows on taxation.
I think that just to add to that point, one of the key use, I think the policy side is where most of the use is from.
Okay.
And one of the key values is the description. I usually describe it as a statute to English translation. So just at a high level, somebody wants to do something and it may be there. And
Rosetta then, Stone, huh? Gotcha.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Thank you very much. Oh,
just a comment.
Go ahead. Yes,
if I may. Thank you, Chair. I mean, it seems like what 2128 does. This is sort of a common sense cleanup here, is to say, let's make this book as streamlined and as useful as possible. Let's take out the federal stuff, and then let's do a study of some of the other ambiguities that you spoke to during your presentation, and see if that results in other recommendations to the legislature. This seems like. I think I would respectfully disagree that the bill represents a big change in tax policy. I think it's really about making the expenditure report as useful as possible.
Thank you. Other discussion or questions? I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2128. There is no other business before us, right?
Correct.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.